Quiet, please.
You're listening to Birdies and Bogeys, hosted by Jordan Bloxham and Weston Mon, bringing you golf's week in review, recapping your favorite tournaments with professional insight from their perspective. Now, quiet, please. Here's your hosts, Jordan and Weston.
Weston.
Jordan.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. We missed a week. We had personal conflicts.
Yeah.
On multiple days. So we just decided to push it to today. And then this will be our last one until everybody has a nice Christmas and New Year's and enjoys some end of the year holiday festivities.
Yeah, it should be good.
But yeah, there was a few things last week. The gala and who did he win? Hoagie. He went with Hoagie. Hoagies and Grinders. He won the QBE shootout, which is a two-person tournament. So it's not an official PGA Tour win, but it is a PGA Tour sanctioned tournament. They still won money for it, so that's good. And then hopefully it'll give the gala some steam and some, because he did make a putt to win. He made the actual putt to win, which was, I think, good for his psyche moving forward, no matter whether it was a two-man or not. But yeah, that and some other big news. LIV Golf, their CEO, Atul Khosla. I don't know. He's the cabbage side dish. I don't know. We're saying it completely wrong, but, or I am at least. You're refraining from saying it.
Hey, that's how you stay in the clear, bro.
But he resigned after just 1 year, and speculation is rampant about why he did. The struggling and amidst turmoil. And I'm like, no, it was just what he was probably over, which was the franchise portion of it. They just, my guess is, like I said, I don't know. Could be that he's just dead.
Hey, executives change seats all the time.
Yeah. Like, and they're people are like, oh, not after a year. I'm like, no, like sometimes less than that.
In fact, the average lifespan of a C-level executive in any organization is like 3.5 years.
Yeah.
So some people make it 5 years, which means some people make it only 2 years or 1 year.
Yeah.
So it's just, it is what it is. He probably did what he needed to do. And he's like, yeah, I've got no new opportunity. Cause he's been around.
Yeah. Apparently he left the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Yeah.
Before that. So he's got some things, and he may have been like, hey, what we're pursuing right now. Right. And it looks like the direction they're going, you know, because he was big into the franchise portion of it. He may have been like, hey, this isn't going to work. Let's just, I'll go my way.
Yeah.
You guys keep going in the direction you're going. Right. It's not like LIV Tour. They just added three new destinations, Tucson, the Gathering Golf Club, Tulsa, Cedar Ridge Country Club, and Greenbrier Old White. All U.S. Right. So now you're limiting some of this travel for these guys, which, you know, they're still going to do some, right? You're going to Mayakoba, and then the next one is in Tucson, and then it goes Adelaide, then Singapore, right? So they're doing some travel, and then back to Tulsa and Valderrama, but it's still spread out over the whole year, right? As of right now. So that's seven. They've got seven more to come. So my guess is they'll squeeze some in there that are closer to the current venues, so you're not going crazy, although you do have to go from Adelaide, I don't know, Australia to Singapore. I have no idea. Haven't made that trip.
Depending on your location, the shortest is 3-hour flight. The longest is a 6-hour flight.
Yeah. So that one's not bad. right? That's not a bad one there. And then you got a couple weeks to get to Tulsa from Singapore. So you're probably good. And like I said, they may throw one then in that's closer or in between those two. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to.
And it's not like a bad deal when they have like the Live 747 and they put everybody on it.
They got the Jets.
Shot.
They got the Jets. It's not like they're, you know, squeezing in coach.
You're right.
Or anything. Economy class. They've got plenty of leg room. They'll be okay. I promise. So, like I said, people are like, oh, it's struggling. And like, yeah, if they don't get a TV deal, it's going to hinder them moving forward. But like I said, it's been silent, which could be good or bad. It's been, you know, relatively silent besides them releasing these tournament dates.
I mean, look at it this way. They ran their first year. You know, they can decide whether that was a success or not. But when you look at their subsequent actions, you have to say that they perceived it one way rather than the other. If it wasn't a success, then they might have taken away some stops, right? Because that costs money to put them up.
Or not, or at least not added stops.
But to add stops, yeah. That's like expanding your product, right? Why?
Yeah.
Because you're seeing success. Like, you don't, in a business sense, and there's some very smart business people involved, they right. wouldn't say, hey, we need to add more so that it just costs more money. Like, there's an ROI there. So clearly, by adding more stops, they're seeing more success and more headway into where they want to go. And maybe it takes a year or two or three to land that TV contract, but they're going to solidify the product before some, you know, TV deal is going to get out there.
And even if they are losing money, or right, the ROA is not where they want it to right now, they obviously see that light at the end of the tunnel,
mm-hmm.
right? To be pushing forward with this, they're like, okay, or it's their business model. They see some things that are working, right? And I think the internet, the streaming structure of actually how many views, how many people are watching it, especially since you don't have the data nearly as good when you go into other markets, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go outside of the US, the data is not nearly as clean as it is in the US. So I don't know. Like I said, my guess is, yeah, they have a lot of money and they have the ability to bleed money a little bit. But do you really think that, you know, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, just keep throwing money at it because of other things? And there could be a myriad of things behind it, right? They're trying to pull aging soccer star. Why am I from
Messi?
Nope. Not trying to pull Messi from Portugal, Chris Ronaldo. Oh my gosh, I've done that like three times over the past week. But they're trying to pull Cristiano Ronaldo for $200 million, right, into the Saudi league. He's not attached to anybody right now, so it's like, if I'm him, I'm like, where do I sign? You know, but they do have that money, and they have semi-unlimited funds coming in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wouldn't be but they're expanding, right? They're still, you know, they were adding players right up to their final event. And my guess is they've got a few more that they'll, once they get a few of the things locked in, first of the year, maybe they're going to announce. I don't know. I was thinking that they would announce a little bit before now, but I don't know. But like I said, there's a myriad of things that could have gone on. It could have just, he ran his course, did what he could do with it. And so he just taking a step back. It wasn't exactly what he thought it would be. Wasn't exactly, you know, where they both thought the relationship would be at this point, and they just decided to part ways. Right.
Yeah.
People are saying, well, it was after a heated argument. I'm like, come on. Now you're just throwing stuff at the wall to see if it sticks. But
yeah, a lot of speculation, but they weren't there.
A lot of speculation. And then speaking of weird happenings, Jack Nicklaus.
Did you ever get in a fight with yourself?
Getting sued by himself. Yeah, the Nicklaus companies are basically, and I think it was in the state of New York, they were like, hey, he can't, Jack Nicklaus can't work and trademark his own name because we gave him all this money to work for us, and it's all under us. So they denied the injunction, so we'll see where that goes. But yeah. Basically, Nicklaus sued Nicklaus. but we came up with the Golden Bear Designs.
Yeah.
It's right there. Now you're not trademarking the Jack Nicklaus name. Now it's a Golden Bear signature design, not a Jack Nicklaus
right
design.
So
workarounds, baby. Workarounds. So, but yeah. And then this weekend, Vijay Singh and his son Cass came from two back to pull ahead, shoot 13 under on the final day. So they shot two days of 13 under in a scramble, two man scramble to take the PNC title. Although if you watched or listened to anything, you wouldn't really even know that they were playing, to be honest. And I didn't watch very many of the shots. Like, I had other things going, and I just
to say that the broadcast was biased towards Mr. Woods and his son,
understatement.
And the reality was the broadcast simply gave live coverage to Woods and replay coverage to everybody else.
Yes.
And day one, that was fine. Why? Because he was, you know, one or two strokes off the lead. So the team actually performed incredibly well day one.
Yes.
Two.
Still don't. Okay. And I sent you a text on Sunday morning after. I was like, wait a second. The Thomases and Woods are playing together again. I'm like, isn't it first in, last out? I mean, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Because they were tied with the Sings after day one. And, you know, for viewership, they decided to push aside, you know, it's the Tiger rules. They've always talked about the Tiger rules, and they're there for sure.
Tiger comes in. Hey, Tiger, who do you want to play with tomorrow? Here are your options. And then you get the option D, which is say whatever you want and we'll make what happens.
I want to play alone.
No, but yeah, technically he was supposed to be in the second to last group. Yes. But no, he was decided to be in the final group. And yeah, whoever has all the gold makes the rules. So, yeah.
And then, like I said, and he has earned a lot of what he gets, but it really is amazing that he gets as much as he does, considering there's a lot of good players that didn't get this kind of treatment, right? For the longest while, Jack Nicklaus was considered the best in the game. He did not get this kind of coverage.
No.
Right? I don't know. It's earned, and at the same time, kind of cringy, right?
Yeah.
It's forced. It's like, oh my gosh, they've got chat like elementary school crushes on this dude, with they're like hee, the giggling that went on in the booth was like, oh my gosh, did you see that, you know, Tiger, you know, he you know, flicked a bug off of, I don't know what it was, but it was just like, look, it's just like I saw a picture of the thing is like Tiger riding on the cart, riding on the cart with one leg out. He's one of us. I'm like, no, he's not. No, no, sorry. He is not one of us. No, he's a golfer, so he does some things that golfers do, but nope. He's not one of us. Sorry. Guess who else is not one of us? Justin Thomas is not one of us. Yeah. Every single one of those guys that's playing in there is not one of us. You want to know why? Because they're really good golfers.
And we're not.
And a lot of us aren't.
So, yeah, it's pretty funny. I mean, it was pretty sad, to be honest. Like, I hopped on social media, and it was like, Charlie Woods, he was getting more coverage than Tiger. And the traditional media was just milking it for all it was worth. And it was just hilarious to watch the broadcast and you hear these statements. It's amazing how much he is like his dad. I'm pretty sure you can say that about every son and his dad.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's amazing. And then second, it was like, it was just the Charlie Woods show, you know, everything. Like, I remember this golf.com or what is a golf channel blip. And it was like, this is when these teams are teeing off. And here's the notables. And it's like John Daly, Annika Sorenstam, Charlie Woods. I'm like, he's not notable.
Not yet.
What is he notable for? I'm like, that guy won some majors. That guy won some majors. Charlie Woods, nothing. And he's a notable, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
And to be honest, and I would like to look, I don't think he's won junior tournaments yet.
I don't think so. Maybe he's won one.
Maybe, yeah.
But
like, let's see. We could probably pull this up right now.
Probably. I'm not even going to waste my time pulling it up. That's how I feel about it. But we've had this discussion. Like, there is only one successful father-son duo in the ages of professional golf, and they're nobody of import, and it's Bill Haas and Jay Haas. That's it. You can say what you want about everybody else and their the potentials and all that, but nobody even comes close to how successful that father-son duo was. Obviously Tiger being way more successful than both of those put together.
Yes.
But you know, you've got to have something happen pretty significantly to even step out of that shadow or even compare, which is just something you're not going to be able to do.
Right.
You can't. I mean, to even hope for that is just ridiculous. So,
yeah. Okay.
Like,
so he does, but it's with an asterisk. So he does have a win, but there was two players in the field.
There you go.
And the other one that he was T1, there was 9 players in the field.
Yeah, well, got to beat somebody. But that's just it. Like, I don't know if you heard the stat. There was a presser with Tiger, and they're like, you know, how were you at age 11 playing golf? And he's like, when I was 11, my mom made me throw away or donate my trophies because he had won 113 events by the time he was 11. He had too many trophies that he donated them. That was Tiger.
But right.
It's a completely different ballgame. And so, and then he only continued to win more, right? Because by the time he was 13, I think he was already winning like the junior USF
So like he is light years, because in the junior PGA South Florida, Charlie is getting his butt handed to him. T22, T40, T23, T28. Those aren't Tiger numbers. Tiger was
one. No, like it's ridiculous. To win the junior US amateur 3 years in a row.
But it's not to say that he's not good. Like there's a lot of good in Charlie's game.
Yeah.
You're just like putting him up on a pedestal with his dad who
prolific.
Yes. Like you know, top, right? I mean, he went through a stretch where he was the greatest golfer like to grace the earth. Right? Like,
oh yeah.
Ever in history. He went through a stretch where arguably no one would beat him A game to A game. So it's like it's not a knock on this him, but it's like they're like, oh, they're giving like the odds. I mean, I'm betting if I'm putting money, because they've got odds on when he's going to win his first major and when he's going to win his first tournament. And I think in Vegas books or some sports books, I'm like, I'm betting against that all day,
mm-hmm.
all day, because then the that he won't win numbers are going to be severely better odds than he will win numbers.
Oh, I just pulled up his junior record, and these are the most significant tournaments that he won. In 84, he won the 10 and under junior world championship.
Yep.
In 85, he won the 10 and under junior world
championship. I don't even think Charlie's played in those.
I don't think he's qualified.
Yeah, in, exactly. Yeah, yes, that's what I'm saying.
In 88, he won the boys junior world golf championship.
Oh, yeah.
The 12. In 89, he won the 13 to 14 junior world golf championships. And then in 90, he won the 13 to 14 junior world golf championships. And then in 91, he won the U.S. junior amateur and the boys junior world golf championships. And then in 92, he won the U.S. junior amateur. In 93, the U.S. junior amateur. 94, the U.S. junior amateur, the Western amateur, and the Pacific Northwest amateur. And then in 95, he won the U.S. amateur and the college All-American. And then the 1996, he won the U.S. amateur. And then when he was at Stanford, he won a grip of collegiate tournaments and the NCAA West Regional and the NCAA Championship individual. Like, the guy did nothing but win forever.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, he didn't even get to the pros yet. This is all amateurs.
Like, it's crazy. Like, you look at that, and it's like, you can't, because he, like, and like you said, I don't think Charlie's qualified for any of these big tournaments. And he's 13, so it's not like his, right? It's not like he hasn't had the chance.
No, and he has all the tools, right? But
yeah.
There's a lot of
players with really good tools that don't get it done. Like you go look at the driving range on a Corn Ferry tour or even like the Latino tour, and you look at some, you're like how is that guy not on tour, right? Everything about that guy says that he should be at a higher level than he is. Then you go look at the PGA Tour and you're like, Kevin Kisner's on the tour, right? The guy's on the tour. This guy's on the tour. This guy's on the tour. No, it's just because they get it done. They have that, right?
I know. They're like absolute tacticians when it comes to playing golf.
And they, like most of these guys, it's like, yeah, they've got a great swing, but they just are a little off when it gets to that point. Something's just not quite there that allows them to get to that point.
And here's the thing, like, and this matters a lot, but like, if you get a guy on average that's a stroke better than another person on tour, it's like the difference between winning like 2 million and like 500,000.
Yeah, it's a big gap.
It's a
big gap.
And we're talking one stroke on average.
Yeah.
Like that's a really big deal.
Yeah.
And there are guys that do it. And it's just like, maybe it's Kevin Na, he just rolls the rock.
Yeah, just gets it done. They have the ability to get it done. So it's not to say that he won't be.
Yeah.
But don't anoint the kid yet. Right?
No. Like, let him breathe. Let him like build a name for himself. And then share some of the news coverage with like John Daly's son, who's like playing
playing D1 golf, and Cass, who's, I think he's, is he trying to play right now, or he was at one point? No, but like I said, let him get to that point and see what it is. And you just wonder if, because Tiger is so protective of himself, that he's done that to a point where it may hinder Charlie Woods's progression, because he can guard it, have him guard it as much as he does. But I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, there was there. I didn't feel like he, I mean, he had the ankle and everything, but it didn't seem like he hit the ball as good as he hit it in the past, like as consistent. Like when he wanted to hit the shot, he hit the shot.
He's definitely beefed up a little bit over the last year.
He's grown like a lot. So
he's grown. He hit a little growth spurt, but last year it was like the club was swinging him, and now he's swinging the club. And he had some decent ball speed. He was like in the low 150s on some of his swings. So that's helpful. He's definitely going to fill out and get a little bit more next year. But, let's see him really play competitive golf and win something before he becomes the star of the PNC Fathers and Son Championship.
Yes. But you went through and did some some digging and on some Tiger Woods stuff. So I'll let you take over for the next little bit.
So do little highlights on Tiger. It's going to be quite a bit here. Break it out in sections, but Tiger has speed back. I wouldn't say his speed, because his speed from 10 years ago was just a different level, but he did chart several, 180 mile per hour ball speed drives while he's at the tournament. And that was pretty impressive, because he's on one leg now. And to see him out driving JT here and there, that makes him incredibly competitive, because as we all know, if you're long on the PGA Tour, you have a future. So that's pretty cool. That's promising. So for the Tiger fans out there, that is a great sign that he should be shaping up his game. But that he did have some equipment changes, and the biggest thing was the new golf ball. So he had been playing the Tourby XS, and now he's playing the Tourby X, which at one point and no longer was considered the Bryson golf ball, but now that they have separated their ways, now the Tiger ball. The Tourby,
even if he was, even if Bryson was there, it was gonna be the Tiger ball,
right? No matter what. But you have some experience playing the Tourby X, right?
Yes, I like it, and the fact is that it doesn't spin as much, but I need that on the driver, and the Tourby XS, like, significant amount more spin with the irons, like. To the point where I was like, whoa, this is spinning too much for me with the irons. But I was wondering the reason that he switched from the to the X from the XS is because he was picking up that speed. And it could be the way that he has to generate that speed, that he doesn't have the control to knock the spin off as much as he used to anymore.
Maybe. I mean, there's a lot of things going on, but making a ball change like that is a significant change, because those are two very different golf balls. They're meant to be different, right? So to see the changes happen with Tiger to where a golf ball with a different spin profile fits his game better, there's definitely some things changing on the equipment side and his swing side. So that was pretty interesting. And then the deeper dive into Tiger's old trusty Scotty Cameron Newport 2 GSS putter. Everybody remembers at the British Open 3 years ago, Tiger decided to put some lead tape on his putter because he said the greens were slow. And so anytime he puts lead tape on the putter, people immediately jump to the conclusion, the greens must be slow. The greens must be slow. But in this case, he just wanted to balance his putter out a little bit better because he put a new grip on. So, I mean, that was it. Anytime you make an equipment change, your club is going to be rebalanced and it's going to make an impact.
It's definitely going to make an impact, right? But what did we just, you said it was, it's like, it was significant because it was like 14 or 15 grams heavier, the Scotty Cameron grip than his ping grip that he had on there. I think is what you said. I think it was 59 and 73 or 74.
Yeah, I'm double checking. I want to make sure that I got the weight right, because grams matter, folks. He traditionally played the Pingman grip, and that let's see here. Fifty-eight grams is the Pingman grip. And that's a pretty light grip. But the Scotty Cameron pistol grip that he now has on his putter, I was told weighs 77 grams. So when you bump that up by almost 20 grams, that changes the balance of your putter. Yes. And I don't know if that changed with a length, because that is something that he had been playing with. He felt it was better on his back to have a slightly longer putter. So he may have put a plug in it. We don't know. And then when you extend a putter, you also add more swing weight. Even though you're not adding weight to the head, when you move the grip farther away from the head, the balance point changes and your swing weight goes up. So if he did make it longer, even a quarter inch makes an impact. And so having a little bit of a counterbalance by adding a grip that's 20 grams heavier but has a similar profile to a Pingman can balance that out a little bit, but not completely, not entirely. And that's why there is still some lead tape on his putter. And there was just a little bit taped into the cavity. I have never seen anybody use lead tape so liberally and non-aesthetically than Tiger Woods. Every time he puts lead tape on there,
it's just like, he's like, well, I need it this much, so I'm just gonna stick it.
Like, it's either in the cavity and it's protruding out and it's like an eyesore to me, but to him it's like, that's perfect. And so you could
all he cares is about the weight and the distribution of it.
He's a total like tools, not jewels guy, but he puts this lead tape across the back and it's not even cut to the cavity size. In fact, there's two little corner wings that peel off and hit the curve of the flange that stick out like little ears on each side. And I'm like, really? You couldn't take like an X-Acto knife and just trim the corners?
Nope.
Or layer the inside of the cavity with like, no, it's just like, oh, I taped it on. That's where it goes. It's done. So
he is the exact epitome of that. I'm just looking at your post and I'm like, yeah, well, he just, that was where it needed to go. And that's how long the strips were.
Yeah.
Weston, it needed to go right there, this much weight. And so it was right behind the ball. And the strips were that long. All of them were the same. So just put them there till we get the weight where you need them.
Right. And some people will be like, yeah, let's actually, Scotty Cameron does recommend that you put lead tape on the sole, but Tiger is very particular about the height of his putter.
Yes.
Because, that he has played with lead tape on the bottom before, but not very much. But anyways, height of the putter off the ground, that matters to him. It affects it. So he decides to put it in the cavity. He's been doing that for quite a bit. But yeah, man, I mean, that's crazy.
And it's right behind the ball. I mean, it's right where you're delivering the strike. So
it's the reason why this is so technical and so crazy to even talk about is because that's just Tiger, right? I mean, there's stories of him on tour talking about, oh, I felt a bubble under the grip tape, under this grip. You need to replace that tape. And lo and behold, they pull it out, and yes, there's a bubble. And it's just like, it's stupid stuff like that where he's a genius, right? He's a savant with golf clubs, and therefore he can perceive things that other humans don't. And swing weights, I mean, there are stories of Nick Faldo, even, who you know, great golfer in his own right, be like, oh, I played the set and the 8-iron was a half a point too heavy on the swing weight scale, which is ridiculous to feel, by the way. But he was right. And there's a host of professional golfers and stories like that, right? But Tiger, obviously, he is no stranger to those types of incidents. But yeah, you know. And then that's kind of the end of the Tiger Woods stories on the equipment. Now we'll just talk about Tiger in the regular media.
It's kind of. Well, he did take some stuff got sold at auction.
Yeah.
One of them may have not been legit.
Well, so, confirmed not legit.
Confirmed not legit. So I'll tell you that because you read about the ball. I saw this. We talked about his Sunday red polo.
Yep.
In a previous episode, and it went for 140 G's.
Yeah.
So, that's just pocket change for that one, comparatively to a couple of other things that have sold. But a signed golf ball, a Tiger Woods signed golf ball, sold at auction. And what did it? Was it a Tiger Woods signed golf ball?
It was.
Give me the scoop.
A Tiger Woods signed golf ball. That's pretty crazy. There is another golfer with the same initials, and when he signs his name, turns out their signatures look pretty similar.
It's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah. So this golf ball sold, and
how much did it sell for?
Oh, I'm looking that up. Let's see here. Pretty funny story, but $3,000 payday.
Okay, 300,000.
Yeah, 3,000. 3,000. So for $3,000, the golf ball sold. But they thought it was Tiger's signature. It turns out it was Tom Watson's signature. So, I mean, pretty crazy. And if you kind of look at how Tom signs his name, it's hard on a golf ball for one.
Yes.
And two, when he signs the O, it looks like the curvature of a G tail underneath the name. And then, I mean, it's a bumpy surface, right? So as you're trying to sign it, your pen can skip because of the dimples.
Yeah.
And then, So if you do see the signature, you'd be like, well, that could be Tiger Woods. But it's Tom Watson.
Yeah. It's pretty similar.
It really is. Tiger has definitely added some flair to his signature, but you know,
so, pretty well. Yeah, a lot of that. And then PGA Tour's at it again.
Oh, yeah.
They added another tour to their lineup because they need to be a global tour. But the problem with that is that, like, you have to go through three levels of the candy cane fort. Oh, wait, that's Elf. Through the sea of swirly twirly to get from the Korean PGA Tour to the actual PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might be harder than getting from the North Pole to New York City.
Yeah, it truly is. But as the PGA Tour tries to combat the competition, and it's not just LIV, it could be another tour that's coming up. They want to control as much as they can to have the most power, as you would expect. So now the PGA Tour is associated with some 7 tours. And if you don't believe me, you can look up their Instagram page, and what it says underneath is all the tours that they're involved with. And, you know, there's the main one, PGA Tour, but also the Korn Ferry Tour and the Canadian Tour. And now it's the DP World Tour, but that's not on their list. And they've got the PGA Korea Tour and then
PGA Tour China.
China. There's a ton.
Latin America. Oh, yeah, there's a ton.
But anyways, they're expanding their reach because they want to get the largest pool of talent to strengthen their marquee tours. So yeah, it's good business. It's what it is. I'm not going to say it's bad. Like, they're just being strategic about how they're going to better their product. And this is what you do. You start buying other tours or strategic partnerships. It's just business.
Yes. It's still interesting to see where the money comes from for this, to, because you would imagine that they would have had to have made some monetary commitment to this tour to allow them to have it be the Korea PGA Tour. But
yeah,
who knows? Like I said, more golfers making more money. I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's great. And it does lead to, like you said, 7 levels of Kenny Kane Forest. The leading points winner on the PGA Korea Tour will get a card on the DP World Tour. And as we know now, with their partnership on the PGA Tour, the top 10 players on the DP World Tour get a PGA Tour card.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, hey, it's a pathway. And there's a lot of different ways to get to the PGA Tour. That used to not be the case. It was like, oh, you can play on the Latin American Tour, and that's it.
And then, then if you're the leading, but even there, right? Because you have to be the leading money winner, and then you get, like, starts. If you're the leading money winner on the Latin American Tour and the PGA Tour Canada, I think the leading money winner gets full status on the Korn Ferry. I don't know what it is now. It's something like that, right? But you have to win. Like, one guy, like, say, same thing with PGA Tour. It's even harder, Korea, because now you got to go Korea DP World Tour, which there's only 10. At least, I mean, now there's 30 from the Korn Ferry that get it, plus another, so many get starts after the playoffs. So there's a much easier way to get it through the Korn Ferry Tour, which, I mean, in itself is not very smart, because you're starting to cannibalize, right, a tour that you own. Right, if I have the choice of playing on the DP World Tour or the Korn Ferry Tour right now, I'm leaning Korn Ferry if I have that option.
Oh yeah,
right. Just because it's an easier road to the PGA Tour.
Uh-huh.
If that's ultimately where you want to end up. So.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Like I said, a lot more options for a lot more players, which is overall good for the game. And people can slam live as much as they want, but
it's changed
them pushing it forward, right? Because there was the, I think, like I said, it didn't fly. It was another similar theory, right? Yeah. Where another breakoff tour that they were trying to do that didn't push through, right? These guys, right? Say whatever you will. LIV Golf had the ability to push into this market and take away the PGA Tours. And it's a monopoly, no matter what you think, right? The NBA's got a monopoly on basketball, right? There's no, you're not going to play in some of these Euro leagues and being like, oh, I made it, right? And yeah. that's where I wanted to be. So they pushed into this and gave the PGA Tour, and they're still giving the PGA Tour a huge scare, and they're a threat, if whatever you want to call it. They can still, I think they can coexist, but
oh, yeah, they're gonna coexist,
but they've forced the PGA Tour to make changes that have been good for golf as a career choice. So I'm okay with it. So whether you like them or not, they did a lot for the players that are not yet superstars on the tour, and made the ability to make money a lot more accessible. So
yeah,
good for them.
All good things.
Yes, sir. But, well, listeners, I think that's it. We hope you all have a Merry Christmas and a safe and fun New Year. But until next year, we're out. Thanks for listening to this episode of Birdies and Bogeys. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe, leave us a rating and review, and until next time, have a great week.